Welcome to the More Perfect Union Podcast, a regular discussion on the state of American politics and current events with entertaining and respectful commentary from across the political spectrum. Hello, welcome to the More Perfect Union, a podcast about the joy we get from American politics. Take a look at us on moreperfectpodcast.com or go to facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast. And take a couple minutes to rate and review us on iTunes. I'm Alan, a dentist from Saginaw, Michigan, a self-described wishy-washy, kinda on the right, independent.
Hi, I'm DJ. I am from Suffolk, Virginia. I am a cost estimator, self-described economic conservative, and self-confessed Republican.
Hello, I'm Kevin. I live in Los Angeles. I'm a Democrat. Not usually too liberal, but this week I may be more liberal than most. And I'm a former television writer who's written for Saturday Night Live and a lot of other shows.
Hi, I'm Greg. I live in Cincinnati, Ohio, the swing state. And I'm a stay-at-home dad who is described easily as a liberal Democrat.
And I'm Jonah. I am a personal trainer from Frederick, Maryland. And somewhere in the middle of all this, I am also an independent.
Well, welcome, fellas. It's nice to have you here again tonight. Let's go ahead and start with our headlines.
Well, my headline is from the Telegraph in London, and it talks about the Texas prison rehabilitation program and how it has inspired the British Justice Ministry to try to bring something similar to Great Britain. And reading it was remarkable for two things. One, the fact that Texas, of all places, which is considered, well, let's be honest about it, the coldest and most vicious state when it comes to dealing with prisoners, lock them up and throw away the key at all, seems to be one of the leaders on criminal justice reform in this regard. And then, in fact, they found it saved them money. It was cost effective. And the fact that we are not the only country that has recidivism problems and problems with supposedly bad reputation for our prisons. Britain's reputation is apparently, well, maybe not necessarily as bad as ours. It certainly is very bad, and it's something that Minister Gove would like to fix. You know, there's a lot of talk about Washington dysfunction, and all of it is true, but one of the things you're starting to see the parties try to feel each other out and try to come together on something is criminal justice reform. And I thought this was actually a very good example of how, on the right side of the political spectrum, criminal justice reform and thinking about rehabilitation instead of punishment is actually getting a lot of cachet, certainly more cachet than, say, 20 years ago.
Nice. I thought it was a good article. It was interesting. Kevin, what's your headline?
Mine is from Politico.com. The headline reads, "Illegal Immigrants Could Elect Hillary," which, by the way, is a really unfair headline because what the article is about is that because of the way that electoral delegates are proportioned among the states, the fact that there are some illegal immigrants or more illegal immigrants in certain states than others gives them more congressman representation and therefore more electoral votes. And the article argues that if we only counted citizens or voters, registered voters, instead of total population, that the numbers would shift a little bit. It would really only make a difference by about 4 or 5 electoral votes, which I don't think really would change the outcome of an election unless we got into a squeaker like we did in 2000. But the reason that I think this is interesting is we all know, of course, that most of the state legislatures are Republican. And a very interesting case is coming up in front of the Supreme Court next year, a Texas case where they're going to try to change the way that state legislators are apportioned by only using voters, registered voters, and not full population, which would include some undocumented workers. If that case goes the way that the conservatives want, I predict you're going to see this spread nationally. It's going to be the next form of gerrymandering where Republicans are going to try to affect the outcome of elections by disenfranchising those illegal immigrants. Now, it's not about them voting. They do not have and will never have the right to vote. But the argument will be that if we change the way we apportion electors, there will be more power to rural areas and smaller states. less power to urban areas and bigger states, and that could somehow help Republicans gain a little bit back in the electoral balance that they have really lost over the last decade or so.
You know, this is, as a Republican, I'm just going to chime in here, one of the more annoying things that I have seen is watching my party essentially continue to do less and less well in urban areas and in inner suburbs and such, and decide that the best way to do it is find a way to put a thumb on the scales. No, the best way to do it is to actually go out and win urban voters. I watched as the Republican Party of New York City, which Kevin can attest to this, is practically non-existent, and yet it still managed to win five straight elections for mayor. They even managed to convince a guy who wasn't in the party, who left the party, to come back just long enough to run on the Republican ticket and win in 2009. And that was, of course, Michael Bloomberg. Republicans can win in urban areas and in suburban areas if they just take the time to go there and ask for their votes. And when they don't get them, find out why and see what they can do. We now have a situation, and I'm going to sort of take this on a tangent. My apologies, Kev. Well, no, I'm not going to apologize for this because I think it dovetails with what he's saying. You know, we spent all the time two summers ago, I think it was, arguing about, well, you know, what level of food stamp spending is proper, whether food stamp spending should be 5% higher or 5% lower, whatever the heck it is. Nobody talked about all of the pitchfork corporatism that goes out there, the crop insurance, the price subsidies, and God knows what else, that jack up food prices in the first place for urban and suburban residents. And why? Because my party, which is supposed to be the party of small government, gets its votes from rural America, and rural America loves those farm subsidies, and they're not going to tolerate anybody opposing those farm subsidies. This is a weakness within my political party that needs to be fixed, and this is not going to fix it. This is using Neosporin when your leg is cut off, and it's just annoying. And I'm sorry to just hijack your headline and vent like that, Kevin, but it's just another example of my party losing urban voters, losing suburban voters, and deciding the solution is to figure out how to way to make those voters less important rather than make those voters less Democratic. It's annoying, and I really wish it would stop.
Your headline is the most perfectly inflammatory headline that we have here, though. I will say that it definitely gets the award for the most inflammatory.
Oh, it's unbelievable. Yeah. First of all, I just want to say, DJ, you did not hijack it, and I agreed with every sentence you said. I even liked the Neosporin joke. But really, I couldn't agree with you more.
So I've been following this Supreme Court case for a while, and I love it. I think this is a truly fascinating case because they haven't really defined what the argument is, because it could be only registered voters count, which means that your kids don't when it comes to figuring out where to draw these lines. And I think what's really interesting about this is that the Constitution and like the foundation of these voter laws don't actually say if it's one person, one vote, one registered person, one vote. It doesn't actually say. And so I am really interested to see how they try to frame this argument, because I actually kind of think that our elected representatives should pay attention to parents. I think that they should think that they have to represent children as well as adults, but it's not necessarily clear. I don't know. It's exciting to me. This whole subject is exciting.
Greg, what's your headline? Let's hear it.
All right. My headline comes from New York Times, one of my favorite places. And we ended last week talking about who was going to win the House Speaker of the House seat. And we almost all agreed Kevin McCarthy was our guy. We all liked him.
Much can change in a week.
Yep.
And this is what I love about politics. Like within one day, within one sentence, everything changes. And it's not just that. With this, everything changes. The whole political landscape changes because everybody thought Hillary Clinton was unbeatable, right? But we put together a Benghazi special committee, a select committee. What are her numbers today? Her numbers are dropping. Why? Because she's untrustable. But no one would have known any of that had happened. Now, was she saying that this committee that they put together because they're Ernstwall's dollar, blah, 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 or because they were out to get her? Either way, one, I don't think he's got a job as speaker. And two, now Hillary Clinton's got a talking point that she's going to rally. And three, come the end of October, I don't think the Republicans on that committee are going to be after her as much, because it fits right into that narrative that he set up. You know, and Representative, the guy who can't make graphs, help me out here.
Chapix?
Yes. He's already applying for the job. And can you think of anyone worse? You know, and he's saying, he's got it. He's got to bow out. But once again, why I love with one line to Hannity, he felt like he was safe. So,
the amazing thing about it to me is that Republicans will go on Fox and think the Democrats don't listen. You know, he thought he was having a private conversation like at some GOP fundraiser where no one would know what he said. And to me, that's, of course, the height of stupidity.
Right.
No argument there. I would still say McCarthy is probably still the odds on favorite. He certainly damaged himself by eating his foot. As for Mrs. Clinton, to be honest, I mean, let's face it. Opinions harden like epoxy on wood when the name Hillary Clinton is mentioned. If you like her, you can defend anything she may or may not have done that was possibly immoral, possibly unethical, etc. If you don't like her, nothing she says or nothing anyone says about her is going to make it all right. There are very few swing voters in regards to Hillary Clinton. Was it a stupid thing to say? Yeah, it was a pretty stupid thing to say. I think he was trying to say, essentially, look, we would not know about this email issue if not for the Benghazi committee. But he didn't say that. He said something else that was far stupider or far more stupid.
Right.
And, you know, it is a reminder that the people we send to Washington are not necessarily smarter than we are. In fact, they're usually dumb.
I will say this. Hillary, this was played well by Hillary and, frankly, Bill Clinton. He had some things to say this week that were really good. But I'm going to tell you, Hillary's done plenty of stuff. I mean, she may have gotten some help on this one, but there's a ton of other stuff out there that makes people, you know, this is not the only thing that made people feel like they couldn't trust Hillary Clinton. Okay. This is clearly one of the things, but this was a really bad move on McCarthy's part. And this was a stupid thing to say.
But when she says, and when her husband says, there is a conspiracy, and when there is now one of the longest congressional trials or out, and it's still out, and someone says, you know what, we set this up, and now her poll numbers are going.
Bill Clinton he said it so masterfully this week. Yeah. I swear, I listened to him like, oh my God, it's just, it's like, if he could run again, does anyone believe for a second that he wouldn't win in a landslide? Oh my gosh.
All right. Okay.
So we haven't actually said what McCarthy said.
I did actually. I quoted.
No, he did. Okay. No.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
Greg got it. Greg got it.
All right, Jonah, give us your headline.
All right, mine's pretty quick. It's a little bit of local news from the Washington Post. A squirrel caused 1,900 power outages in Frederick, Maryland this weekend. A squirrel broke into a circuit grid, knocked out a transformer, led to 1,900 power outages. And that's great. But then the last line of the article was that the spokesperson didn't know the condition of the squirrel. And I just have to say, he had to know what the first question from the reporters was going to be. So he went with no information for this. That's all.
Squirrel, I hardly knew ye. Oh my gosh. That's awful.
That is.
All right. So, what happened this week, guys? Anything on the horizon that
what happened this week? That's a good one.
Yep. That's a good one.
Being this could be evergreen content, someone should fill us in on what happened this week. What was the big story that we're going to talk about?
School shooting in Oregon.
I would say so. So at this point, what do we know? What do we know about the shooter? What do we know about what happened?
Well, I don't know if we need to give details about the shooter, or, you know, give details about
what happened. He went into it was a community college in
community
Oregon.
College went in. I believe 13 people were wounded or killed. Yes. Now I've got my facts.
No, it was 10, including the shooter.
Yep. 10 were killed. Excuse me.
Right. That's correct.
Others wounded. So, yeah. Another, this is, the reason that this is so frustrating is because it's just, it's one in a, what seems like never-ending series, and that's kind of where the frustration comes in.
Right. And the other question is, where, as a country, do we start laying, could this have been prevented? Where do we start laying the blame, and how do we stop the next one? Are the questions that immediately we want to start jumping to.
Sure. Now, it's worth mentioning that Obama was scheduled, I think he was scheduled to do a press conference like right prior to when it happened. So wasn't that how it was? It was his press conference wasn't specific to the event, but he spent time talking about the event, like almost right on top of the event, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, and I think he did a very presidential job. I mean, I think that's the word I was thinking while watching it. You know, he handled it. And, you know, he said, how many of these are we going to have to do until we actually do something about it, in a nutshell? You know, this happens so frequently. It's, you know, another one. Now we're not going to do anything, but it keeps happening. You know,
well, I am uncertain how presidential it is to essentially blame half the country for the actions of a complete nut bar, which is, the president didn't quite go that far, but he came really, 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 really close to doing that.
It's not half the country. When after Sandy Hook, 97% of the country said they wanted greater gun restrictions, but, you know, because of, I'll just say, the NRA and lobbyist groups, it wouldn't pass. You know, I mean, I'll just say it out loud. It is what it is. Money talks. Mm-hmm. You know, and they were afraid of re-elections, and they would get beat, and blah, blah, blah. But when the polling said 97%.
Greg, I did not see that poll, but I did see polls about a week or two afterwards that showed far less support for gun restrictions. And the reason is, and again, we don't know about this situation because we're still only a few days after it. The reason is, what usually happens in these sorts of things is that we find out that any new restrictions that are the usual list of restrictions that are proposed, we find out, no, actually, they really wouldn't have stopped that one. They wouldn't have stopped this one. They wouldn't have stopped the other one. And in the case of the one before this, the one in South Carolina where Dylan mm-hmm. Roof took out 9 people, what we found was that actually, had there been better coordination between federal and state governments, it wasn't new laws that are on the books that were needed. It was the current existing laws. There needed better communication between the feds and the state governments. And in this case, we're starting now to, there's stuff internationally that's popping up all over the place. I wouldn't necessarily call these sources reputable, so I will say this first. But
okay.
I'm seeing sources that now say that Russia's Federal Security Bureau had this guy on their terror list. ISIS is claiming responsibility for this guy. Now, granted, ISIS claims responsibility for everybody. And I don't know how reputable the sources that I've seen are. But my point is, we still don't know everything about this guy. We were told that, oh, well, this is the typical person who was recruited and was recruited and was white. And, oh, actually, no, he wasn't white. He was mixed race. His mother was black.
Right.
So, oops, there was one assumption that fell apart after about 48 hours. We don't know everything about this guy. We don't know everything about who he is or who he was. And until we do, going around and making jumps and assuming that this or that policy will fix the problem when we find that it didn't actually fix any of the previous ones is not necessarily the best move.
That might be fair, but let's step back and let's not take this guy as an example. We have had more information about some of these other things, and I have to tell you that's weak sauce when it comes right down to it, because this stuff has been happening so commonly. I would love to know. My thing is this: I don't think anyone has an idea that would actually. I think when it comes to guns in the United States, that horse is out of the barn. I mean, so many people are gun owners. There's so many. I live in the state of Michigan, and honestly, so many people grow up with it. We're a hunting state. I mean, I'm one of the very few people in my circle that doesn't hunt and doesn't do stuff with guns. So, part of it is that when you talk about gun owners, gun owners are not necessarily people who have it strapped to their ankle and are waiting, you know, are waiting to break up a mugging. Most gun owners, I suspect, are hunters. Okay. So it's like I don't know if there's anything anyone could say that, or any regulation that could change this. That's the thing that frustrates me. I feel like politicians and politicos jump in saying, well, if we only did this, we would, and I don't know that anyone has any evidence that there's stuff that could stop this stuff. That's what freaks me out about this.
And the thing we have to remember is that part of the reason this seems to happen so frequently here is because we happen to have the third largest population of any country on the planet. That does have an impact. I mean, Norway had one. I mean, Anders Breivik wiped out 77 people in Norway in 2011, and they have 1/60th our population. It took 3.5 years of these things just to catch up to what he did.
Right, but that was an isolated incident.
That statistic, that means nothing.
Right, I mean, that was, I mean, if we talk about...
It does mean something when you're trying to figure out what is causing or not causing these things. Part of it is...
I know what's causing them.
Data is data.
No, there's a one of these things. It's guns. And we could talk about mental health, and we could talk about background checks. We have to do something about the abundance of guns in our culture.
Okay, Kevin, let me do this. Greg and I were talking about this, but Kevin, I'm handing you the magic wand that says, Kevin, you can use this magic wand to do whatever you want. And what are you going to do to change it with the magic wand? What's your move with the magic wand?
Well, my first move among many, my first move is to either revise or do away with the Second Amendment. Now, again, I know this sounds radical, but I'm just speaking from my heart.
You have a magic wand. You can do whatever you want.
You can do it.
Okay. So, well, I would do away with the Second Amendment, and then I would start looking at ways to take those 300 million guns that are in circulation and start bringing those numbers down through buyback programs, through trade-in programs where they're getting smart guns that need either a chip or a handprint to activate the gun. Much like cash for clunkers, I know it's a bizarre kind of analogy. I would also raise the age for legal federal ownership of guns from, I believe it's 18 now. I would raise that to 25. Again, this isn't going to stop 26-year-olds and above from killing people, but it's one thing we can do because a lot of these people tend to be younger males who haven't learned how to deal with their anger management problems yet. And I can go down a list. I mean, you know, the Australian laws that have been, you know, quoted and are becoming a little bit of a cliche right now, but point by point, they do some very specific things. Like, for instance, it's a 28-day waiting period there. They do detailed investigations into people. It's not just you fill out a form and tell me whether you've got a mental illness a lot or not. They actually speak to the individual's doctor, to their family, to find out, is there somebody else in the household who has a mental problem, who should not be exposed to guns? Now, I'm not going to go through the list right now, but I'm telling you, there are a good 6 to 10 things that we could do immediately that would make it harder for people to get guns. And to me, I personally think that what the right has done and the NRA has done so brilliantly is they've put people who think like me on the defensive to the point where we have to go, oh no, we're not talking about taking away everybody's guns. We just want sensible gun control measures. Well, it's bullshit. The sensible gun control measures are the ones that take guns off of society's hands.
Okay, now you have to hand the magic wand over to DJ.
Okay.
I'm shooting it over to you.
Okay.
The first thing I'm going to do with that magic wand is move it back to 1999 in Columbine, Colorado, and under Kevin's new plan, those kids don't have guns, so they set off the bombs they took with them, and they kill hundreds instead of just the 10 to 15 people that they did kill.
That's speculation. Maybe they don't go off at all. Maybe they kill
the bombs
three
didn't go off at all, but right. I guess
they didn't have a chance. They didn't have a chance to set them. I'd also remind them that Timothy McVeigh did not need a gun when he killed 168 people in Oklahoma.
Yes, but you know, you're talking about one incident versus 255 this year.
It's not 255 this year. In fact, I can tell in terms of the mass events, we're talking about half that over the last 15 years in a country of over 320 million people. Now, I will tell you what I would do in this kind of situation. One, I would, if I had my magic wand.
Yep, you've got the wand.
I would eliminate all government-owned or controlled gun-free zones. If a private individual or a private landlord wants a gun-free zone, hey, that's their responsibility. I cannot mess with their property rights. But a community college or a state-based college like Virginia Tech, which was a gun-free zone when the Virginia Tech killer was around popping people, that would all go away so that anybody would know if they're going to try to do this in a community college or some publicly owned property, that somebody could very well be armed and get rid of them before they can actually do anything serious. That would be the first thing. The second thing I would do is we need to be far more serious about institutionalization for people who are violently mentally ill. And we need to be serious about it. A lot of the problems that we've seen, and it's not just with gun violence, but we've seen it with the homelessness epidemic of the 70s and 80s, was to people, and we're starting to see it again in New York today, is to people who should be committed, who largely can't be committed because of the restrictions on commitment that were supposedly done for the rights of these people who are in no position to make these kind of decisions for themselves. And then once that goes through, then we see what happens and then we see where we are. And I'm not necessarily saying that gun regulation is by itself a terrible idea. The Second Amendment says the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. We have rights to a lot of things in America, and that doesn't necessarily mean there is no regulation of them. But the notion that a gun itself is something that can somehow stop what frankly is, let's be honest here, this is the United States of America. We are a more violent society than most other places. Just about every other place that left the British Empire either did it with the consent of London or under London's own direction. We're just about the only one that shot Britain out of its colony. Nobody else actually did that.
So okay, I'm taking the wand back. So I'm not going to use the wand because I'm pretty frustrated with this whole thing. As I told you guys before, I have kind of one thought about guns. I don't want to get shot. That is my thought about guns. And my concern is that I feel personally the mental illness thing is overused. I think there's something to that. But I also think that there's no evidence that we are good enough at screening mental illness that we could actually do that. That sounds great on paper, but I feel like, being somewhat familiar with this stuff, I don't think that's going to work. I don't think that's the solution. And I know the right falls heavily on the mental illness thing. And you know what? Maybe some of these people are disturbed, but there's a ton of people that also have similar problems that never go on to cause violence. And so I don't, it's clearly not a cut and dried solution that way. On the other hand, how many, these shootings are done with legal versus illegal guns. I don't have all that. Oh, it sounds like lately a lot of them have been legal and the guns have, gotten through checks, gotten through security at this point. They've gotten the guns legally, is what I'm saying. So I'm at a loss.
We know the Sandy Hook guy took them from his mother. That's what
who got them legally.
So right, his mother got them legally, but he essentially stole them from his mother.
That's fine, but he lived with his mother, and they were there, and he knew about them and everything like that, and he shot them with his mom. The bottom line is they were his guns as much as they were her guns, whether he stole them or not. He had access to them. So there's that. That's, that part always frustrated me. I've heard that. I'm not jumping on you, DJ.
No, that's fine.
Yeah,
they used
to shoot together. So, I mean, he had access to them, clearly.
I'd like to jump in and just correct one fact. I'm reading from Friday's Washington Post. The headline is, on the day of the Oregon shooting, so far in 2015, we've had 274 days
and 294 mass shootings. Now, we can differ on the definition of what a mass shooting is, but clearly there have been a whole lot of them in 1 year.
Don't they say mass shootings are four people or two people? How do they define it?
According to shootingtracker.com,
which is one of your bookmarked sites, clearly.
Oh my god. It's I wish you wouldn't say it so like I don't know, like everyone doesn't have it. Generally mass it's a mass shooting is when four or more people are shot in an event or a related series of events, likely without a cooling off period.
And by the way, fucking obscene.
and by the way, the leading day this year has been August 2nd. So if that's your birthday, you win the lottery.
August 3rd is my birthday.
And by
August
the way,
2nd had five mass shootings this year.
Okay.
Yes. And right now we're up to 296. Okay. But for the record, some are wounded. Not all of them are murders. Okay.
If you were the third guy who got shot, when only three people were shot, how pissed would you be? Seriously, like I
should also note that according to Jason Schlidkraut of the State University of New York in Oswego and M. Jamie Elsass of Texas State University, and I'm getting this off PolitiFact, by the way.
Sure.
They collected and analyzed mass shooting incidents in 11 countries from 2000 to 2014. And they found that over that 15-year period, the actual number of shootings from their data is only 133, and that our mass shooting victims per rate of 100,000 people was less than Norway, less than Switzerland, less than Finland.
Right,
our homicide rate is higher than just about everybody except Mexico.
All right, let me explain those numbers. Let me explain those numbers. They're taking the sheer number of people versus the events, okay? And that's why Norway is so high, because of that one event. We're taking different people, different events. We have 209, and we're comparing apples and oranges here. Data can be skewed that way, okay?
Oh, well, Robert Koch said if you torture the data enough, it'll confess to anything.
Oh, I know, exactly.
That's true. And actually, I'm going to cut through this before you guys get into the weeds. The bottom line is we have way too many shootings here. I mean,
right.
I understand that it's a huge population, but it's like, well, on the other hand, the media grabs hold of just about anything and beats it to death, too. So it's one of those things where crime statistics clearly show a decrease in crime and continuing decrease in crime, even though we have these crazy school shootings and that sort of thing. That's the thing that's so frustrating. Most people, if you ask them, they would say, oh, no, crime's going up, but it's not.
All right. No. Okay. So I lived in Tokyo for about 5 weeks. Okay. I was staying there and I was there and someone got stabbed in Tokyo, which is a pretty large city. Okay. And I was reading the American paper and it said front page, someone gets stabbed in Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked my brother who lived there. I said, so is this person famous? And he goes, no. Someone got stabbed, and he looked at me like, don't you understand the weight of this? and I said, no, because stabbings don't even make our paper. They might make the police report. So the next day, I look at the paper again and said, stabbing person, okay, blah, blah, blah. It was in the paper for a week, this one stabbing, okay? I mean, it was like the biggest thing ever in Tokyo. Okay, and I couldn't understand it, and because no one gets shot over there, because they don't have guns. Okay, I mean, yes, occasionally someone gets stabbed, but that's about it.
But what do you say to the fact that violent crime statistics are going down?
Do you gun homicides overall are down 49% since 1993.
What is it? Yeah, that's the thing. It's like we've got – I honestly think that the way that we look at this stuff is very skewed because of the media. However, it doesn't make what happened any less horrifying. That's the problem.
No, it does not.
We've got it coming and going. You know what I'm saying? So Americans don't even know what to – that's why I'm stuck on this. I don't even know what to think about all this stuff.
Can I borrow the magic wand?
Do it. Take the magic wand. It's your turn.
Right. And tell me if both sides agree. First of all, I live – in Southwest Ohio, right next to Kentucky, a lot of people hunt. Okay. And we have to hunt over here because we have a horrible deer population. If you do not hunt, the deers get out of control. People run into them. Mm-hmm. It's terrible. You have to hunt the deer. Okay. So I understand that concept. I do not hunt. I don't have guns. I don't enjoy sitting in deer urine because it's just not my thing. Okay.
But not mine either. It's okay.
Hey, no, everyone's got their fetish. Okay. Whatever. But at the same time, we don't need assault rifles. You are not assaulting a deer. In fact, it's illegal to use an AR-15 on a deer. Okay. You're allowed to use, there's a musket season. There's bow and arrow season. There is never AR-15 season. I'm pretty sure. Okay. And it's not fair. So why are we making these guns? Okay. Why are we making these sniper rifles that you can buy? You know, and why aren't we attacking why are we not going after these gun makers who are making these expanded rifles? My father, who used to carry guns all the time, that's another story, used to say, if you couldn't shoot someone in 6 shots, you shouldn't be shooting at them. You should be running. You know, there's no reason for this. You shouldn't be there. And he had a good point. These are sensible things that probably could help a little bit. And I'm not taking guns. You can't yell fire in a crowded room. Okay. And we probably shouldn't arm people to a point where it's ridiculous. And this is where we're starting. Hunting is fine. It is a way of life. I understand that. You know, and hunting will always be because we have to control the population here, or there will be terrible accidents. But we do not need these AR-15. We do not need grenade launchers. We do not need these things. And they're fun. They're cool. People have to say that. But we don't need it. And what they're causing is terrible loss of life. Terrible.
Okay, I'm with you, Greg. Let's promise to revisit this. It's tough because right now it's super hot and we're super emotional about it because this just happened. Let's revisit it again another. We got lots of time, so we'll revisit it another time.
And probably at the next shooting.
Yeah. Well, hopefully the next shooting. Exactly.
Let me. My thought here on this, because I've been listening to this. I sort of feel like maybe I or people like me are one of the reasons why every time something like this happens, there's the obvious emotional response. But it's always, for me, followed by, I have no idea what the solution is. Mm-hmm. So I didn't even want the magic wand because I would wave it. I don't even know
I'm
what I'd
you,
wave
man.
It at.
I'm with you.
And because I, like so many people in my extended family, I have law enforcement, I have military, I have hunters, and I forget most of the time, but I'm a gun owner and they're not in the house. And I forget that I have guns. They're just out. I don't even know where they are, but they're mine.
That's a comforting thought.
Here's the thing.
We may want to edit that, Jonah.
So, no, I mean, the weird thing is, like, I inherited them, and they're old, and they're historic collector's items. And I look at them, and I'm like, this is pretty cool. I don't have a gun safe, so my friend with a gun safe is storing them. But I own them. And I think about my dad, who was a farmer in West Virginia, and every time a deer got into his garden, he would shoot the deer and he would send me venison. So I don't know. Like, that's all I have.
I think the other thing we have to remember is, and this is something that I think, you know, I remember in the early 1990s when there actually was an assault weapons ban that was enacted into law. It essentially was allowed to expire in 2004. And I remember being stunned that it was allowed to expire in 2004 and that there were no consequences, because there was one enacted in 1994. It was supported by most Democrats and a large chunk of Republicans. It is a reminder of the fact that what really drives American opinion on this is not necessarily the mass shootings. It's everyday crime. When crime in New York City was basically considered out of control in the 1970s and the 1980s. And Kevin, you grew up in Long Island. You probably remember this. I grew up in New Jersey. You know, Kevin, do you remember thinking to yourself, whatever happens, I don't ever want to be in New York City when the sun goes down?
Yes.
Okay. That was the period where America was genuinely frightened and scared. That's when you get movement on the gun issues. This stuff, it upsets America, it frustrates it, but it doesn't scare Americans. Americans were scared in the 1980s and early 1990s. They're not scared now because crime in general has fallen so precipitously. As often as these things happen, they are considered outliers, are considered unusual. When homicide is not considered unusual, when it's just de rigueur, then you get movement on the gun issue. The NRA didn't win in the 1990s, and it didn't win in the 1990s because, you know, Alan says he's afraid of getting shot. We were all, not only were we all afraid of getting, I mean, we're all afraid of getting shot in some way, shape, or form, but for people in the northeastern part of the country, especially, getting shot was very, very likely. It was in the top of your mind. It was something you figured was probably going to happen if you were caught in a big city at night. We don't think that way anymore. We feel safer than we did 20 years ago. And I think that drives a lot of the politics on this.
All right, let's wrap that up, guys. Let's move this along. But before we go, let's talk about the polls. We got someone bring up the polls before we can wrap this up. What are we looking at for the Republican polling?
Oh, sure. So in the Iowa Republican caucus, presidential caucus, we're seeing same old. Trump is still leading with 24%. How? I do not know. Sure. Yeah. Why not? Carson.
Irina.
Thank you. Cruz, Rubio, Bush, Walker. Do I have to? Oh, Walker is still.
Walker's out. And he's
Walker's out.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Huckabee, Jindal, Paul, Kasich, Christie. And I'm not even going on after that.
It's just, seriously. It's just, okay. But what is interesting, and I didn't realize this until you guys were saying it earlier, is that actually Trump's down from 29 at the high. So actually Trump and Carson are actually both kind of heading downward, even though it seems that they're crazy high right now. Whew.
They're slipping a little. I think, the reason that we're still seeing Trump ahead is basically the gigantic list that Greg had to read and got exhausted reading.
Mm-hmm.
There's still, you know, Walker's gone, but there's still 16 – there's still 15 other candidates going up against Trump, and the folks who have elected experience are basically they're chopping up a lot of the anti-Trump vote. I also think, as I mentioned earlier, the conservative wing of the Republican Party is much more tribal than it used to be, and it's much more tribal than it should be, frankly. And they've decided that basically, well, we, you know, it doesn't matter that you know, Donald Trump is all over the map on certain issues. It doesn't matter that as recently as last Sunday, he still wants essentially a government monopoly healthcare system. What matters is that the establishment doesn't like him, and that's good enough for us. Well, no, that's not good enough for me, and it shouldn't be good enough for us.
Yeah.
Sadly, it is good enough for a lot of people, and that's why you get, you know, that's why you get what you have. I am hopeful, though, that Carson's slippage means that crazy comment that a Muslim shouldn't be president was something that turned some people, even in the Republican Party, off. I'm hoping that was why he slipped and why he will continue to slip.
Yeah, there were a handful of Christian, clergy that didn't like that, you know, because I don't know. I think that they can recognize that if somebody says that because you're religious, you're not qualified, you know.
As a Catholic, I never heard that, but my parents and my grandparents heard it for years.
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's how I was actually introduced to Kennedy as a Catholic also, was that he was the one president that people told him he couldn't be president because he was Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I do want to throw in, I know we're talking about the Republicans, but I just want to say Bernie Sanders had an impressive money haul this quarter.
Oh, boy.
A
very impressive money haul. Again, I don't think, you know, one quarter does not a presidential campaign make, but it does mean that Hillary will actually have to campaign to beat him. I still think she will, but she'll actually have to do it.
Did anyone see her on Saturday Night Live last night?
I did.
Yeah, I thought she was terrific.
She was great. She's becoming much more of a person. That human emotion app that she got installed.
Yeah.
Fabulous.
And you know, the Bernie Sanders supporters are, you know, bragging today about the fact that he turned out 26,000 people in Boston, 20,000 got in, 6,000 were outside. And it's an impressive feat. But, you know, let's remember that the same night she was seen by about 6 to 7 million people being really funny and really charming, and that counts for something too.
Oh, and I there, totally
and
there's agree.
A, and you know, those of us who have been, Greg, you, how long have you known about the trick of when you book an event that's too small so that not everybody can get in?
Yeah,
it's a great trick.
It happens all the time.
I used to do that all the time. If we knew that we had 50 people coming, we'd book a room for 40 so that 10 would have to stand. Right. Oh, yeah.
I love that. Okay, guys, we're going to wrap this up. The very last thing, we're going around in a circle to say our goodbyes. I want you to, we're looking at early October. Who are the two people who are going to head the ticket next November? That's your guess right now, and then we're going to wrap it up. That's the guess of the week. So I'm going to start. It's going to be Clinton versus Bush. Greg, what do you got?
It's going to be Clinton. I hate to say this, but Rubio, because it's going to be a fight. Clinton Rubio.
All right, DJ, who's it going to be?
Clinton versus, I got to see what the coin does.
Magic 8-Ball.
Coin is head. The coin is heads, so it's Clinton versus Bush.
Okay. Jonah, what do you got?
I think it's Rubio, and I think it's Sanders.
Wow, okay. Last but certainly not least, Kevin, who you got?
Clinton Rubio.
All right. You guys, we killed it today. And we, you know what? It was hard because keeping it civil was a little tougher this time, I know. So we definitely have to come back to the gun issue when it isn't so hot. So let's promise ourselves we're not going to wait for another massacre to talk about it.
I agree. I thought it was very civil. No one used the motherfucker word. In my house, that's very, that's civil.
All right, you guys.
Hard feelings for me.
All right, we're coming back next week. This is too fun. So go to iTunes, rate and review us, and tell your friends. Thanks very much, you guys. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the More Perfect Union podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes and check out the website at moreperfectunionpodcast.com. If you have any questions or comments for the More Perfect Union podcast crew, you can email us at moreperfectunionpodcast@gmail.com. We'll talk to you next week.